Like even when I just
cook your food quickly.
You see with the when I do the one where I'm just singing a tune and I'm literally listening to my music at that time, yeah?
Mm.
And if a tune comes on, I say, nah, man, I'm going to share this with people. Mm. And that is me in the moment doing that as it's happening.
Mm.
What's happening here?
We're getting a food in. We haven't even done like a, you know, ones like we normally do an intro.
Clark, what a delivery, bro.
Yeah, through the window.
Bomber Clark.
Yeah, bro.
We have just got the food in.
Stop it.
Through the window. There's no rules. This channel, the Poet and Rouge channel.
This is the kind of thing that happened in Jamaica. I mean, Jamaica, that's a Jamaican move. That's something that would happen.
And it's Jamaican food as well, so yeah. We've got everything patterned.
You know, you got any Guinness Punch in there?
I was going to order it.
You were.
I said, no, forget it.
Why?
Zed.
It's one of those, it's a condiment that, you know, in respects of like,
what is in Guinness Punch? Is it actually Guinness?
Guinness.
Is it Guinness in
condensed
there?
Milk.
All right.
Nutmeg.
Slow, nice.
Egg. Yeah, man.
Condensed.
You actually got your ginger beer. I can't believe it.
Yeah, come on.
The restaurant actually. Anyway, everyone, get your own food.
What was that?
Callum, get your own food. I'll get full.
Obviously, ordering from the Caribbean spot, they always have nothing. Something is missing.
Always.
They had jerk chicken missing. And Poet, I was like, bro, how can they have jerk chicken missing?
You can't have a shop.
Right?
You know what I loved? I loved. What was I used to watch? I think it was Robbie G and them lot. They had a show that used to be on, a black show. The McCoys, I can't remember. Real McCoy, maybe?
Yeah.
And that used to have the Vex woman in the West
Caribbean
Indian
shop.
Yeah. There's one in every.
Mm.
There's a Vex black woman in every West Indian shop, bro.
Just, every single one.
You know, when you're ordering, you know what I mean? Her face is like, what do you want? I love that Vex woman, man.
I don't understand.
They
why
make it part of the experience, to be fair. I feel like you need that to be like.
You don't need that.
You don't need it, but
no one needs that, man.
But it adds to the
you
experience.
Know, you don't need that, man.
Because you hear so much about it. It's like if you go there and she's feel like you're like, this is not what I.
This
was
isn't
told
what
before.
I ordered.
It's
like Nando's when they ask you, "Have you been to Nando's before?" It's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You need them to ask you that question.
Man? I didn't even know I was getting food, man.
I asked yesterday, and then Roscoe informed me that you're trying to be healthy, so we got your rice and. Fish.
Did you get fish, yeah?
Steamed fish as well.
Aki. You didn't get no aki and saltfish.
See, so mad.
Shout
again, aki and saltfish. I didn't know again. That's why I asked.
That's the Jamaican national dish, bro.
Of course. But I didn't know what you wanted. I wanted to be specific. I really tried.
I'm not
fighting down a man.
Here you go, Callum.
Should we do
what
a prop-
was you saying? How's that going to work?
So, I forgot.
We don't have to. We can just start like.
Because, again,
there's no rules.
There's no rules.
No rules, man.
Which is nice.
I can see that, man. I want the delivery to stay.
Yes.
The delivery has to stay in.
I think that is lit. The
food has come in, but do we do like a proper intro now?
Yes.
Like, yo, welcome to the Poet and Vooch podcast.
Yes.
I think a lot of people have been asking for this over the
years.
Yeah, bruv. And Poet's obviously been doing Halfcast for a long time and loads of other podcasts. I've appeared a few times and we've always wanted to do one. And now finally, we've got our own channel now.
Love it.
And there's no rules. So you're going to have some food. We've got Ian Wright on, talk football, life.
Love that.
And just keep it going. And have a nice, hopefully.
Always nice.
I love the nice.
I had my red one on the other day.
That was beautiful. When you wore my Have a Nice jumper, I was very happy.
I love watching your stuff, man.
Thank you.
Some passionate fans, man.
Yeah, Serbian fans.
Whoa.
Red Star, I was there, Copenhagen.
Yeah, I was watching
hopefully
that.
Taking this guy next week.
Yes.
I'm hoping. Very passionate fans.
You know what I want to do at some stage, but it's one of those
things. Take you in one day.
Nah, man, I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to do those, since I've done the Soweto Derby, man.
Yeah, you want to do more Derby days.
People have to experience that, right?
Yeah.
And I want to do Boca Juniors and River Plate.
Anytime
I go to a World Cup and Argentina playing, I always go.
Yeah.
I just love being in the energy and the passion off of them fans, bro. Mm.
And
they welcome you in as long as you're supporting Argentina. They've got so many songs. The songs.
Honestly, man.
I love the songs.
It's so melodic.
Someone taught me one of
very
the songs.
Very melodic. Oh, Vooch, you knew a song? No, that was a Brazil one about Maradona.
Vamos, that's it. Vamos, vamos. Argentina. Vamos, vamos. Alessa, something like that. Aqueste bando. Quilombera. No te llega, no te llega a alentar. Vamos, vamos, Argentina. And you do it, when you do it and they do it, it's just like, you feel something.
You feel
like,
it. Bro. Because you don't get it with soul. England.
They sing the national anthem and that's, we haven't got anything.
And they got that, no, they got the guys with the drum. You know, the guys with the
It's like going to Soweto, watching that, watching the Argentinians and they get together when they do it. It's just like, it's powerful, man.
For me, what I like about, and I learned this a lot from Vuj and then through traveling in work.
Fish team.
That's Ian's.
I kind of learned that it's like,
I was watching football the wrong way for a long period of time.
What do you mean? I can watch football the wrong way. Oh man, that's nice.
In a sense where it's like, the wrong way? When I've gone and experienced, like for example, I went to the Marseille Paris Saint-Germain game. And you see when it's a day out for football, this is a serious thing. From the moment you open your eyes in the morning, today's football. And I kind of like going to a country or a part of the world where that just happens to be the vibe, because then the whole approach throughout the whole day, everything you're doing is catering towards 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And then it makes you even more excited for 3 p.m. In England, mate, I get up about 1:30, I have a bath, before you know it, I'm 5 minutes into 5 minutes late for the game. It's like, there's no real process.
There's no process of what you're doing.
It's because like here, it's just become very commercialized and there's so much money in the game and maybe as a society, we're a lot more, I don't know, health and safety, organized, you know, things got to be a proper way. I think in these other countries, like when I go to Serbia, people are smoking cigarettes in the ground. No one respects where someone's sitting. First come, first serve.
Yeah, man.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, but that's, that seemed like, I think that happened, that was in Soweto.
Yeah.
People came. And you know what? It's really, I'm so proud of the fact that there's so many black people in one place, no violence, drinking from the time they get there to the time. Everybody, it's more the drink, the more dancing they were doing. No fighting, no nothing. And you think to yourself, this is just like, this is really such an experience to see. The people were so jovial. It was a proper experience. I can't stop telling people about it. I literally can't stop talking about it.
That's amazing that you've got to.
No, because like fans and the way fans are was important to me. Like it was, my thing was fans. And I think it stems from my childhood. The love that I all of a sudden found from people and strangers because I was good at doing something in particular, the fans showed me unconditional love. When you score, they wanted you to score and then they wanted you to be their hero. Then you score and then they love you even more. You run into the crowd, you hug them, you can feel it and that. And then you've not let them down. You've done something for them that they can't do themselves, but they need.
Do you know what's so mad? When you speak about it like that, all I know, my first memory of football is being an Ian Wright fan. Then my first memory of teams is being an Arsenal fan. So when I think about what you've just said now, I think to myself, one of my reasons for gravitating towards football was one, I wanted to have a better relationship with my dad. And two, I wanted to feel a part of something. Yeah. Like I wasn't a rude boy, so I couldn't go and join the boys on the block. Like I wasn't particularly great at football as a young age, so I couldn't go and play and immerse myself in that way. But I had an interest in football and I enjoyed football. So for me, it was like, I want to be a part of something. I want to feel something. And then when you're there, it's almost like an extension to your family that you've got, or it kind of replaces a family that you didn't have.
Yeah, football is family for sure.
Do you know where I'm coming from?
Yeah, it can become family.
What was your reasoning for being so involved in fans? Because not every footballer is like that. Certain man just score, put their hand up and keep it moving.
You still have the passion, because you can hear in your voice that you still have the passion and love for it.
You know what? It's got to stem from, and you know what I mean? I'm not trying to, how can I say it without sounding like I'm looking for...
There's no rules.
There's no rules. No love in the household from a child. No love from people who was in and around me. People would say to my mum, bring Nicky and Mori, don't bring the little one. And I'd probably go and then you end up breaking something at their house or they don't want you at their house because they thought you was the rude one. And I grew up in a kind of a situation where nobody really... I didn't get a lot of love. Only time that love came towards me is when I started playing for Palace, started making good money, all of a sudden I came patriarch of the family. Also, everybody loves me. So to not have no love, I remember saying to somebody, I can't remember when my mama ever hugged me. Can't remember it. Of anything, any kind of like, just out of the blue, like I do with my Lola or Roxanne or my daughter Bobby before. Just, you know, when your kids are, and you just want to hug them just because you know?
Yeah,
I just like, I'll call Roxanne. Lola, Roxanne, come here. and they've come from all the way upstairs, all the way downstairs, and said, come, hug me. Aww. And then they go, and then they hugged them. But the fact is, I remember saying something, I do not remember being hugged and loved until started to meet my teacher, which everybody saw.
Yeah,
started
that was to get mad.
Some, started to get some kind of like love from a man who's got nothing to do with me. But I believe, to answer the question, sorry for this long-winded answer.
No, cool, man.
Is that because I didn't get a lot of love and adulation when I was younger. So all of a sudden, to become good at what you're doing to the point where you're playing football for a living and getting paid, then you play for Arsenal, and fans love you for the way you play and the way you express yourself, and just because you do a bit of skill or you score a nice goal, and they just love you and singing your name, you know, when you're on the bench, like at Palace, before I scored my first goal, they were singing my name to come on. I remember I scored when I came on against Oldham, scored against Andy Gorham. Yeah, we was losing 2-1 when I went on. Kevin Taylor made it 2-2 and I scored the third one. And I remember running up the Arthur Waite stand bit where that Palace where you see, and tears was coming out of my eyes. That's because mad. They were singing for me. I came on and scored, and then, you know what I mean? It was that was where this affinity started. I just love the fans. It's all about the fans. David Rowcastle.
Rowcastle.
When I started at Palace, remember, I was like, David was, by then, he started to fly in the first division, him and Arsenal. He was doing unbelievable things. And I remember going out with him when we'd go out in Nunhead. We went to them places, like them little dances where we used to go. And I was at Palace, so no one knew me. People were all over him, bro. Talking about, like, and it wasn't like at the time photograph stuff, it was autographs, man. It was just wanted to show love, and he had time for everyone. And even once I saw him when he was Arsenal, I'd watch him in the fans, he'd have time for everyone. He says they're the only thing that's sacred, properly sacred in the game. Never let you down, the fans, as long as you don't let them down. That's what he always said. Fans are everything. And so for me, the fans giving me the love I got from the fans is why I suppose that they can see what I'm about. And even now, when I'm talking on the television, they see. You know, like, I remember one time I was on with England. We lost to Ireland. And, like, you know, people went crazy because I said something like, I don't want to say anything anymore. I was losing to Ireland, man. You know what I mean? I said it on the tell. I said, so, Ian, what are you going to say? What can I say? I ain't got nothing to say, man. And people say, hey, what do you mean you haven't got nothing to say? You're being paid to be a pundit, this and that. And people were going mad, saying it's so bad. How can you be on there? It's wrong and this and that. But the people upstairs, they said, well, that's what you felt. You know what I mean? I'm representing the fans on there. That's what people say now. That's what they say at ITV. So, Ian, you're the Mark Pugach. Say, Ian, you're the barometer for what the fans are thinking. What are you thinking at the moment?
That's mental,
so
isn't
you
it?
You went from like, why are you saying that to like, no, yeah, actually, no, you're the voice.
They're saying, so Ian, you're the barometer. Because like, with the, when I've done the one where we won the penalty shootout against Colombia, you know when you watch people and they say, I couldn't watch. It's the only time in a football match that every, you know when people say, I can't watch?
I literally
couldn't watch.
Oh, mate, do you want to be honest with you?
I couldn't watch.
Everyone knows I'm not even the biggest advocate for being an England fan. It's not really in me, but I couldn't deny what was.
And you know the thing about it is?
I couldn't watch it. It was so emotional.
It was really weird because I was very conflicted. Because it was Ospina in goal. And if we're going to really roll it back, it wasn't a great penalty from Eric Dier. A good goalkeeper saves that penalty. Ospina's not the tallest goalkeeper. It kind of went under his arm. So I was kind of like thinking to myself, oh my God, it's Eric Dier, oh, it's Ospina. Surely he's got to score against Ospina. You know what I mean? Dissing my own player, man, just for England to win. But then what happened was that as it was happening, the build up to it, I kind of had an adrenaline buzz where I was emotional because I didn't know how I was going to react to England losing another penalty shootout.
Yeah.
And then I've got to go on the television. And I get a lot of people from the black community, especially early doors, and like saying that I'm a sellout and this and that because of England. Like, all I ever wanted to do when I was younger was play for England.
Yeah.
All I ever wanted to do was play for England. And I think because I missed out on all the tournaments through form and through the fact that marriage didn't take me, I always see the tournaments as me still playing in it.
That is mad. Euro 96, I was gutted.
That was my tournament, man. That was the one where they had the golden goal and everything. The golden goal, man. I'm destined for it. They took Robbie Fowler. They took Les Ferdinand. None of them had any kind of previous of scoring in, an FA Cup final off the bench. Or my first goal for England was off the bench. So I'm there thinking this season, it was the Rioch season.
It's just the reason why, though. Rioch was...
It was the Rioch season.
No Arsenal fan like Rioch, so we know
in,
why.
I was in a real weird place all season. Still ended up with 23 goals, but...
My brother, quickly, man.
But the thing about it is that I was playing that season to get into that squad. So everything I wanted to do, I didn't want to diss him. I didn't want to do anything because I didn't want to jeopardise anything to get me into the squad. And Terry Venables didn't even bring me. He didn't take me. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the one. I'm going to score the goal.
What do you reckon? Why was it they didn't want to bring you in? Was it politics?
He left me out the very last game. Might have been Mexico. I think I set up Robbie Fowler's first goal at Wembley against Mexico. And he said, listen, I know what you could do. I know what you're capable of and this and that. And never heard from him again till after it. And then when I saw us needing the golden goal to win like the semi-finals or... And I weren't there. I'm thinking to myself, Jesus Christ, that's meant for me, bro. I can never let that one lie. That was meant for me to be there. When you look how close Gazza's foot was...
To getting it in. Oh, my Lord.
That was my moment. I can't get over the fact that was my moment. Gareth Southgate's penalty. Should have been my penalty. I look at things like that because Gareth Southgate had to step up and take that penalty, like the 6-1. I would have probably been one of the penalty takers. So those are the things that I think about when I think about Euro 96. It's a hard one to take because when you look at how great the team was, you know what I mean? And then it's about the backup team, man. It's about the backup team. It's about like people like myself who can. Could you imagine if I was coming off the bench at Wembley, 96 with like 10, 15 minutes to go? Fans are going to be happy with that,
aren't they? Energy as well, yeah.
I'm telling you, man.
Did you score more goals than Fowler and who else?
That season, but remember, it was a season, like I say, with Rioch, where it was in and out. Me and the man was constantly bickering and fighting. You know what I mean? It was a hard one.
But I kind of understand where you're coming from because obviously, even in football, there are certain players that you have to pick for particular scenarios. So, for example, I remember at one point, Chelsea were very reliant on Tory Andrew Flo coming off the bench because he was a completely different dynamic to Zola.
Yeah.
Whoever they wanted to play off the bench. So he'd come off the bench. It'd be like Origi today. You know, if you bring off Origi, there's just some... Do you know what I mean? So you might bring Origi in the squad just because...
Yeah, but it wouldn't have bothered me so much, Paul.
Yeah.
If he used Fowler or Ferdinand, because they're top players.
They're top players, but I mean, like, under them circumstances, we see where we used to see in Newcastle start Les Ferdinand. We used to see in Liverpool start Robbie Fowler. We've seen the fact that you can come off the bench and do things the same way we saw it with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah.
It was just like, why are you not giving that opportunity at that time? Because you're kind of correct for that scenario. But
It was really cool because it's really weird how universe works and how, God, if you believe in that, how it works. Because I remember I had to do some stuff in Qatar with Venables. And me and Terry Venables ended up next to each other. But remember, he's somebody that I know anyway. Man told me how it was something that it plagued him. In the end, because he knows. Terry Venables would have probably... I believe I would have scored a golden goal. Mm. It's in me. I just think that. Terry Venables knows now when we're sitting there with a 6-hour flight from Dubai. We're talking about it. And he said, yeah, I know. Yeah, it was one of those. I said, I can't believe you didn't take me. I told him all that about the thing. He said, well, you know, you'd make the decision. I've thought about that many times. I know it's one of those mistakes that you make, but you make a decision at the time and you hope that it's the right decision. You know what I mean? He said in the end, he didn't use them, but he thought that for what he was planning to do was, they were the right guys to have. You know what I mean? You look at it, you think of 96, people don't think of Robbie Fowler and Les Ferdinand. No, I know that if I was involved, I would have had an impact. I would have had to.
Yeah, especially, no disrespect to Les, but if you're looking at the type of player you'd prefer perhaps, then you're right.
We have to check with Les there. I think Les might have scored a few goals that season. If we check it, if it was Newcastle.
But Les and Fowler.
They were flying.
Listen, Fowler.
They're both great strikers.
They're just great strikers. Incredible. Mm. Robbie Fowler, especially for me, is just a different type of striker.
I know Arsene
Wenger loved him, innit?
Different level finisher.
Some of his goals at Old Trafford as a young boy coming up and dinking the keeper. He literally had no respect, but... It's the circumstances to me that were very unique. Yeah. It's an international stage. You're talking about coming off the bench in Wembley, something that Ian Wright's done before. It just seems like the right thing to do. But then in the same breath, you can say the France 98 World Cup, Michael Owen doesn't seem like the player that comes off the bench and scores against Romania or starts the game against Argentina and scores an incredible goal. But Glenn Hoddle takes him, takes a chance in the young boy.
And then he does it.
Do you know where I'm coming from? So it's just...
But this is why... For me, I'm not bitter anymore about stuff.
Okay. You seem very passionate though, still. You seem quite.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know what you do? Because I came in so late, It's all catching up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Everything was about catching up. So then what happens is that you're building towards these bigger, because I've wanted to be on the world stage. All I was doing all the time I was training was to get on the stage with the best, so you can put yourself up with the best, you know? And so when you do that, and then through whatever reason, whether it's the season, the Rioch season, and it was just one of those in and out seasons. I think in the end, we just qualified for Europe or something. Dennis scored a great goal at the death and that. But like all this time I'm training, from the time I got into football, is to play at the highest level, to be the best, right? So when you do all you can and it doesn't happen, it's very hard to ask questions of other people and what happens.
Yeah,
but
frustrating.
When it's difficult to take. So you have to, it takes a while to be able to deal with that, man. I'm 55 now, man, and it's still something that, if you talk about Euro 96, people talk about the miss, people talk about Gareth. Could have been so different, man. Could have been so different. Because it's meant to be. My mum said it as well. She was one of those. My mum used to be one of those women that, when she had an argument with people, she put a cross on the wall, all them voodoo. My mum used to do them things, and she used to say, put voodoo on
I can already see Daily Mirror.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Ian Wright's mum.
You know what I mean?
No, my mum was like, listen, it's Jamaican families though.
That's what they do, man. Crosses.
I can't lie. You know what? I'm from a maybe similar background.
Yeah, of course.
Where them kind of things.
Crosses, bro.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with the energy.
I'm not on it, fam.
You don't want to mess with the energies.
Listen, I'm not. My mum used to tell me, wet the bread before you throw it in the bin. I never understood it, but the energy she gave me that request with,
it sounded right.
To this day, I still wet the bread before I throw it in the bin.
Wet the bread, put it in the bin.
You think I got time to ask questions? My mum was saying to me, do as I do. Was it? Do as I say, not as I do. I ain't got time to ask her questions. And she's angry. Are you gone mad? I should ask her now, though, because I'm a little bit older, innit?
Yeah, man, got to ask her. Bread. It's like my mum, you know, can I no rules, innit?
No rules. Yeah.
It's like my mum used to tell me about when, with the women. And like, because my, I don't know what it happened with the, because I'm sure that there's a lot of people that, because I came into the game how I did, there's a lot of black people in London who think that my mum's got some kind of juju business going
on. Oh, yeah, because you just come through the back like an elated.
You know what I mean?
Hackney Marsh is one of them. Wembley,
and then what's it called? Even Steve Cocker was saying he's always waiting for something to happen at the training, or someone to come and take me away or something, because he couldn't believe that some, like what I was doing, how I was playing, and no one found me. And no one took me
crazy,
at that time. Steve Cop was thinking, there must be something wrong. What's going on? How can this guy just appear like
this? Go under the radar.
You know what I mean? And I remember my mum used to tell me about the girls, be careful with them girls, because she heard that there's some of their mums are, what's it called, burying, like they're soaking.
I'm so scared to hear what's going to happen next.
My mum used to say, don't eat rice from them. Because they would take their knickers and boil their knickers in the rice. So when you eat the rice, you're tied up with a girl forever.
I'll tell you what, a couple of my mates might actually be under that problem right now.
Oi, my mum used to say, do not eat rice from don't eat rice from
do you
them,
know
please.
How much of that I
that
wasn't
is
expecting
mad.
That.
Yeah, that is
oi,
mad.
Don't even joke,
but
man.
That's Jamaicans though.
That's what I'm saying, man. Don't eat rice from them.
Listen,
so
just eat.
That's funny.
Don't eat rice because they might put the
knickers
and put the knickers of the daughter in there.
So they stay
boil
with you.
The rice. So they
stay with you forever.
Look at me. I'm eating rice.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's funny.
I swear.
Oh, my Lord.
I don't know how we digress to that, man. But like,
I love this podcast already. I'm loving it.
I don't think anybody's
got these stories out of you yet.
Mad unique, though.
Magic.
But like I'm saying, it was really weird. My transformation from trying to get into football from the age of 10. You don't get until 22. So then when I get into, of course I digress again, but when I got in at 20, all I was thinking about was trying to be the best I could be, play at the very highest I could. That's all it came down to.
22 years old is when you turn pro. That's your first professional contract.
Yeah, 3 months they signed me for. I remember when I was playing Sunday morning football, I was scoring 3 and 4 goals a game. I was scoring goals in the finals, the end of the season and stuff like that. I remember I used to score so many goals that in the game, after I scored 3 goals or 4 goals, I'll try and score a goal by, I'll just try and hit the post with the shot. I'll try and hit the crossbar. You know, so that's when I tried chips and tried any kind of thing. That's why I tried anything.
Yeah.
And all it done was, it just got me ready for finishing in certain situations. Because
your finishing was exquisite. So do you reckon that kind of period of you playing like that is definitely impacted your game? And do you reckon if you had gotten in, if you had, let's say, a more traditional route, do you think your journey would have been as exciting?
Can't be that exciting.
No.
I lived life before. Prison at 19 for car offences and stuff like that. You know, I remember when we lived on the estate, my brother was a kind of good footballer. We used to have to go up the stairs of the estate.
Mm.
And my brother was able to get a tennis ball and go up to the second floor without touching it with his hands, flicking it up onto that step and then reacting to if it goes that way so as you could stop it. And I used to try and do stuff like that. So he tried to get the ball up the stairs all the way up to where we live. My brother could do it. It could take hours to do. But those are the kind of things I didn't know that inadvertently was teaching me how to
touch.
Yeah. Because even when all the guys, when I was younger, when them guys all got bikes, we got into... No rules, bro.
No rules. Someone's ringing on the door.
Cameron, do you want to go? Oh, sorry. I got baby wraps in somewhere.
Yeah, that's actually crazy.
No,
but it's crazy how, like, in life, right? I feel like maybe as I've grown up and matured a lot in my life, I'd say those moments which you might view as negative, or they're the ones that you're thinking, I haven't got a pitch to play on, but I'm hitting it against the wall.
But this is what I'm saying.
And that's the thing that
what's this for?
Builds you.
Roscoe says you need tissue for your
what
mouth.
For? What the thing is that what I found with those things is that it helped my reactions. I weren't doing it up the stairs for that reason.
Yeah.
I was doing it up the stairs because all them guys in and around my 12 and 13, those kind of years, they had bikes. We couldn't afford a bike. So when them man went and rode all over London because they had their bikes, I had to play football. So in the block, I was be on my own. So you have to make games up. So I'd try and bend the ball. So you had the poles where you have to hang the washing up in the block of flats.
Yeah.
So I'd make sure I'd bend the ball to try and hit that pole in the middle there. So you do it with your right foot, then you try and do it with your left foot, then you do it with the outside of your right foot, you do it with the outside of your left foot. So then all you're doing is honing your striking ability.
Mm.
You don't think that you're doing it at the time, because what I'm doing is just trying to find another way to relieve the boredom. And so that's what you try to do. So I was trying with the football, I try and do that.
Mm.
And then in the end, you know, you get to a certain level. Like once I got to Palace, kind of had all my, the football and education, what I had in respects of learning skills and doing the stuff, was already in there. I just didn't have the professional know-how of, you know, where you do it on the pitch and where you don't do it on the pitch.
So it's almost like you had it, but you just didn't know how to package it.
Didn't know how to package it. It's like, I can't remember from the age of like 9 to 13, I can't remember passing to anyone else. No. You know, you're talking to kids now, they're playing in games. And they're 8, he's organised games and he's playing on this side. I've never done that. Just played football, man. I don't even remember passing because it was a time where we used to play a game where the game was, it's your turn with the ball, see how many times you can beat as many people as you can. That was the game.
This is...
But that's what makes you, I'd say, one of the most unique characters in football and a story that we all look up to.
Mm.
Like, my background, poet's background, you're one of those characters that people want to see do well. We want to see you speak your mind. We're happy to have you here, and, you know, that connects with our stories. And it's just fucking amazing, isn't it? To hear that... Because I remember that we used to go to the park, and it would just be
Honestly, Vuj, you could never get over the fact when people say, I was in the park, and I would say, I'm right. You know what I mean? I'm in right. That is very, very hard to process, to know that somebody's doing that, saying they're being you.
It's crazy. Used to do that. That's what everyone done. Man used to argue. Man would argue. I'm in right now. There's like 5 in right now. One's Bengali, one's white, one's Australian.
I'm in right.
There's no rules.
Don't lie.
There's no
but
rules.
But that element of like also like just being, using what you have around you to make the best of the situation.
Yeah.
Because I never used to have many friends like growing up moving around in London a lot.
Mm.
You'd kind of move in circles a lot. I used to just have a ball and kick it against the wall.
Mm.
And that was it. That was my fun. And for like an hour, I would just be kicking the ball, trying to curl it, trying to see if I can, skid it. And obviously I didn't grow up to be a footballer.
Go away.
But, you know, it ended up being YouTube. But what I'm saying is, regardless, it's about using what you have.
What you've got. Yeah. And the thing about it is, Vuj, is that then I look back now and I think to myself, so if I wasn't doing that for all those hours, what I had to do it for, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden you start to think, well, where I grew up wasn't so bad, because there's times where you think, oh, it's a fucking 8 round here. It's fucking
hard. Yeah.
But then now I look at how that and the situation I found myself in and the way I used what was around me to do it. That's how it works, man. Mm. That's how the universe works. It gives you what you need.
Yeah, exactly. It's and funny. You're free to utilise that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's up to you to utilise.
It is funny what Vuja's saying. You might have been the first YouTuber from football without YouTube. Like, just from your character. Like, you just done... Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I reckon every footballer from the Jesse Lingards of today, they've all got a bit of Ian Wright.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? They've all looked up to somebody like you. You was a massive character in football and it made you translate outside of football. But that purely must have been due to, like you said, the way you grew up, and you spoke on about a couple of things, like going to prison at 19, mm-hmm. and if you're coming pro at 22, what was your social group like? Because I can tell you, before I done YouTube, I was doing YouTube, before it became a situation where it's like I'm getting paid for it, they kind of say to you, so what's your other job? So what was it like being Ian Wright, 20, 21 years old? What was the social group? You've just come out of prison 2 years later and you're saying, I want to be a footballer. What is that part of your life like?
It was hard because I was in between, because, you know, how can I put it? I knew, like, Sean and Bradley. Mm. So let's say the year before, so the year, let's say the year starts now, and then by the end of the year, like I'm 21, I'll get into a palace. That year, I realised that the people I'm moving with, they're smoking a lot of weed, they're drinking a lot of drink. It's all about girls. Some of them have got 3 kids already. And stuff like that. I've got my missus at the time, Sharon. She's pregnant with Bradley. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't do this no more, man. Mm. And what used to happen in the dances, what I used to go to, people, like the older guys would be pulling me saying, what are you doing in here, man? Wasting your talent. What you watch when you get older, you're going to regret what you're not trying hard enough to be. I couldn't do anymore. I had to stop going to dances and going out to those little shubbing places and parties, because the older guys who were good footballers themselves at the time, they had no chance. And they saw it that I had some form of chance. Mm. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I've done the trials. I've written to all of them. Mm. I've not got anything back. I've failed at the trials. I'm not good enough. You know what I mean? But then you go and these men would talk to you for just standing there in the dance, just talking to you. And you're like, you can't move. Because you can't move from these men, because they say, well, they're talking to you. They're telling you. And they were right. But the fact is, I didn't know how to go about it. I was just playing Sunday morning football. You know, so that's what my life was like at the time. So I stopped going to the dark, and I needed to work. I needed to work, because now it's got Sean, who's just like 3, coming up to like 3 and whatever it was. And then Bradley's, like I say, he's just about to be born, because Bradley was really young. He was months or something when I was at Palace, when I signed at Palace. It's funny, because... It's like once Bradley's, well, all my luck changed. Bradley brought the luck with me. And I remember telling people, I had to go for the trial for Palace. And it was one of those situations. Roscoe, I think it was, what was it, the Father's Day? The Father's Day, I had to tell people, and I didn't have no one to speak to about, you know what I mean, how nervous I was going for this Crystal Palace trial and how it was. And I remember I had a bath in the morning, and Bradley, he was really small, 8-9 months or something. He's walking in the bathroom while I was having the bath. And I remember he was eating the bubbles in the bath, and I had to stop him. But I just started talking to him about what's happening now, where I'm going, what I'm going to be doing. This is the trial for Crystal Palace. This might be it. I don't know if it's going to happen, you know, but hopefully, you know what I mean? I'm just going to go and just... I'm not talking to Bradley like I'm talking to you guys now. I'm just going to go and just do what I do. Went to all these trials and, you know what I mean? I tried to play how people wanted me to play, hold the ball up. I'm not good at it. I'm good at taking people on. I'm talking to Bradley. You know what I mean? The little baby walking about, trying, holding on to the bath and doing his stuff. And it was almost like that chat, once I went to Palace, I just went and just played, man. It's just like...
That's lit.
Just went and played, simply because I genuinely thought that they were gonna let me go. I turned them down 3 times, because I got the job at Tunnel Refineries. Like I was saying, like you're saying, what was I doing? What was my... I had to move away from people, because they were going somewhere where I didn't want to go down that road. I didn't want to go down the, yes, you know what I mean, then I'm going to have another girlfriend, and then, you know what I mean, I might, yeah, and then I'm going to, you know what I mean, I'm going to go to another dance, and I'm going to sign on, and all this stuff, you know what I mean? I weren't going nowhere. Mm. I was in a quandary. I was going nowhere. It was just like, it was depressing. And then my mate Dean, who lived across the he went out with my missus Sharon's sister, Selma, and he got the job at Tunnel Refinery. And then he said, listen, they're looking for more people. And I went there, met the guy, Gary Twidell, got the job, and then that was it. I was in the job for 6 weeks, and then Palace came with the trial, offered me 3 times, turned them down 3 times. And it was only luck. I met the boss one time after I turned him down the second time. I met the boss in the canteen. And he was talking to me and I told him about Palace, told him about all the stuff, everything about how many tries I've had, I'm not good enough in this. And he said, well, you might as well have, they've tried three times now. They must see something. But the time I was scoring in semi-finals and finals. And so I said, yeah, I'll go. And that is when he said, yeah, I can go. So that was the Thursday. And it was the Monday I had to go to Palace. And it was the Monday morning and I had that bath is when I... Bradley gave me the chat. Bradley gave me the chat and then I went there and then bam, it just happened, man, because I didn't care. And when trialists used to come, whether it was Palace or Arsenal or wherever I saw them, I was just always used to pull them. I was just say, play your game. You know what I mean? If they're going to take you, they're going to take you on what they think you can do. Make sure you show them what you can do. Doesn't take much. Don't need an hour to watch. You can do it in a flash.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, like I saw Pepe at Newcastle. Got the ball on the right, flashed the shoulder and done something. And I said, that's our player, man.
That's what I was... My brother, you feel me? I saw one thing at Newcastle.
I said, that's our guy. He's our guy. And so when I'd say to the trialist, and that's the same thing what Steve Koppel said to me, never change the way you play. You're going to have to play in the structure of teams. Yeah. Be yourself in the way you play. Express yourself. Everybody should be doing that. This is why I've got such a problem with young kids playing football. They can't express yourself when you're 8 years old playing in the Chelsea or Arsenal kit, Tottenham kit, Man United kit. Too much pressure. Family on the lines, all this sort of stuff. That's not people who are playing with freedom. You know, I was very fortunate that I got to play with freedom till I was 22. And then, all of a sudden, I had to learn on the job. And that was hard because I was with some hardcore guys like Jim Cannon and Mickey Joy that, you know, when you lose the ball, when you're up front, them old man, they, you know what I mean? They're getting pressured. Then all of a sudden, you get into the dressing room and they're holding you up in the dressing room. Yeah, man, saying to you, if you lose the fucking ball again, you're going to fucking knock you out. Because they're thinking I'm trying to do skills and try to do stuff. And then they're, you know what I mean? Remember, I'm scared of these, man. I remember the first time I saw Mickey draw. Remember, this is professional footballers. This is like the holy grail to me, you know, being in a professional environment. Footballers. I remember Mickey Joy was smoking a cigarette on the toilet when I walked past, and I walked past like this because the door was open, because obviously door was open, man's on the toilet with a cigarette and I'm looking at him and he's a professional footballer, and I was walked past. I couldn't believe it, didn't comprehend it. It's like when I was younger, I saw when it was wet day, I went in to go toilet and the teacher was eating an apple, and I was like, I must have been about six or something. I couldn't believe the teacher was eating. It was the same It was the same vibe I had when I saw Mickey Joy, professional footballer, smoking a cigarette. I was like, my God, professional. It's professional. Jesus, it was hard because, like, it's only when Mark Bright came as well, he's got to get a lot of credit. I realised that I'm gone from, what's it called? So, normal bloke in the street who is working in tunnel refineries as a maintenance man trying to fix up brickwork here, plaster. And then all of a sudden, from that day, to, you know, you score your first goal against Oldham or whatever it is, and then you've got to do interviews. No one told me how to do those things. No one told me what to do, what to say. If I watch the interview of myself now, even watching myself when I can't even watch myself doing interviews when I was after the games until I got to a certain stage. I used to take the piss in them.
Oh, you were so funny.
You know what I mean? You used to take the piss in
them. So funny. Great television.
I used to love watching Gazza do his interviews.
Oh, Gazza was great television for interviews.
So that was great. Tunnel refineries.
Yes.
What other kind of jobs did you have to do in your...
I left school at 13. I used to leave.
You know the ones that you hear, like 16, yeah, 13, yeah. I walked 13. Out.
I left at the because you know through that year, that's when you're meant to do the mock exam.
Yeah.
So that's a whole year of like homework and revision.
You said, nah, I'm
never
out.
Done none of it. So never done none of it. So the exams are coming. So I'm here now, 13. The exams are coming. They're 2 weeks' time. And I started seeing this girl, Andrea. Or
at 13?
No, but it's just messing around.
Yeah. Oh, you're
you were ahead of your time.
Yeah, I've seen her. But like, it was just like, she was one of them. I went go to their house and it was cool. You know, nothing wasn't happening really.
Yeah.
And such. So and then a guy gave me a job. The guy next door, Deli, his name was. Deli, and he worked with Mr. Burke. Deli was the bricklayer. Can't forget them things, man.
Those are legends.
Seminal moments in your life.
Yeah.
And I remember he said, listen, I'm going to give you £50 a week. 13, just turned 14 I was. £50 a week. You know what I mean? Just to, you know what I mean? Come and do the labouring and do the stuff. And then I'll try and teach you what's going on. And so I went and I'd done that. So I'd leave the house because obviously I didn't tell my, tell my mum I weren't going school. So I'd leave the house in my uniform and go to the place and put on the work clothes, go back home in the uniform. And then in the end...
That's lit though.
After a couple of weeks...
At home alone.
I told her. After a couple of weeks, I told her, but then she was fine because I just, she's going to just give her the money, didn't I?
She's lit.
Yeah, she just gave her the money. So that's how that happened. So that's how it started for me. Stopped working. Then all of a sudden, I went from this building site, that one, working with this guy, working with him for a few years. And then in the end, like when I got to like 17, 18, and then I stopped working with him. And that is where I went through a phase where I weren't doing anything. You know what I mean? That was the time where, you know, I started to, like I was seeing this girl and she bought me a car. For £60, she bought me my white Vauxhall Viva. I got
The car was £60.
£60, man. It's not registering. Yeah, man. A girl bought you a car.
Yeah, man.
Second one was £60.
These are bloody £130. Yeah. They ain't getting me nowhere.
There's the old guy in the block of flats. He had an old. He bought it. He probably bought it because he had to come back for showing it. And I bought it off him. But I was 17 at the time, so I bought that car and I was going out with her and it's kind of like, you know what I mean. She kind of lent me some money. Like I gave her the money back. Gave her the money back.
I'm a good guy.
But like the thing is, and then I bought a Fiat 125 with brown at the top, beige at the bottom, Wolf Race wheels, no bumpers. Car was at a police. It was like, I might as well have had a siren on me. I might as well have been driving with a siren. The car was so in your face and illegal. And so, you know what I mean? I kept getting stopped in that, got stopped in that one before. And then this is how I ended up going into prison, is because I accumulated fines over two, three, four years. And the thing is, once I got a job, a decent job, and I said, you know what, let me go and see if I could pay them some money. I wanted to go and pay some money towards the fines. It must have been at the time, it would have been £3,000 maybe by the time I owed the amount of fines. Because I wasn't
quite
even...
Quite a bit back then.
I wasn't even turning up to court, man. So there was a warrant out for me and everything. So
this is a mad thing.
Yeah, so then what happened was is that I go to pay some money. They just arrested me, man. Went to court the next morning. Before I knew what was happening, I was in Chelmsford Prison. I was in Chelmsford Prison for like 24 days or something.
24 days, were you in a cell with someone? Were you
alone? Yeah, I was in a cell with someone. But the guy who I was in the cell with, Andrew, his name was, he was like...
He's been everyone's name.
No, you're never going to forget that, bro. You're not going to forget. I cried every night. Because I'm not a thief. That's not where we're meant to be. My mum was... It nearly killed her, knowing that I was just in prison. Jesus. And so it was one of those where he went out every day because he had to do his stuff, but I was just in there. I didn't do anything. And then I was out before, you know, and then I remember I done that prison show where the football behind bars.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And then I went back to the cell. They put me in the holding cell for when you leave the next day. And I remember when I was leaving, like 19, I was just going towards 20. And that's when I said, I'm not doing anything off the tracks. Nothing. No one could make me do anything off the beaten track. Mm. I'm not doing nothing illegal. I'm not coming back here.
So did you reckon you needed that moment in a weird way, to push you to that next level of discipline maybe?
Yeah, because like, I think the journey is what the journey is. So whether I needed it or not, that came along at that time, because I know one thing happened for sure, that arrested any kind of development I had in respect of anything else I might have been thinking, because at that time, when I came out, I must have had about £19 they give you. I remember on the train I said, I've got to fix up my business now. Whether that means college, night school, or whatever it is, I've got to do something like that. As time went, I got a job, and then I got that job. So I got this job with this labourer who took me to a building site, and I'd done some building site down in New Cross and done that for about 16 months, 17 months. Then I stopped. And then I remember, because I was at my mum's at the time, I stopped doing it because, to be honest, it was hard. And then my mum said, she's going to, if you're not, you've got to find a job. Or else you've got to get out. And so I was in and around Sharon's and in and around my mum's. And then I went to work at Sainsbury's for a month.
No way.
Yeah, I went to the forest. It was Sainsbury's, but It was like, so I had the interview and... You know, so
why is this advert with you and Sainsbury's never happened?
Sainsbury's,
they are massive bag to collect.
So let me tell you the story how Sainsbury's wearing, maybe probably why it won't happen, but the fact is that I remember, so, you know, so because you're going to the interview and literally the Sainsbury's couldn't be any fucking closer to my house, right? So we lived on Tame Out Rise. You come down Tame Out, turn left, and Sainsbury's is down there. And my mum said, you go for it. So that's the first place I went. I just came out. I just said, you're going to Sainsbury's, man. So I went in there. And then I said, yeah, I'm looking for a job. And then they said, okay, come back. So it would have been a Tuesday or something. Come back on Thursday. So I went back on Thursday. I kind of put on some kind of decently clothes and that. Went in on Thursday. Told me everything, this and that. They want to do this. I had to do papers and all that. And it was about four or five of us doing it at the time. And then in the end, they came in. And then they said, yep, we're going to take you on. You start on Monday. Then they start going through what's going to happen. What will happen if they catch you stealing? What's going to happen, this and that? Jeez. And what's going to... So you're sitting there. And the bit what made me think, made me actually go kiss my teeth to myself, was when they said, you won't get paid for the first month. You have to do a month work. And then you get paid the end of next month. So literally, when they said that, I was gone. They might as well have just said, you might as well leave.
Oh, no.
Man, so I started working anyway, and then I just started, what's it called, man? I was like Robin Hood, bro. I was giving people rice, flour, peas. You know what I mean? You know what? And the thing is, you know why I started doing it? You know why I started doing it? I'd see people, like there'd be a bag of flour, and I know what flour means to us and that, and rice. So they'd have a little slit in it. You see, man, them just throw it away.
Mad, innit? Yeah.
Just throw it away. You know what I mean? Like, they'll have, like, steak. What, like, they might have a little perforation because someone pick it up and something just perforated the side here or something. And they'd want to throw it away. So I just started to collect all that stuff, man. So by the time the month finished, man, I just left Sainsbury's. I never even got paid, man. People nyam food.
Sainsbury's owe you a check.
Yeah, man, they owe you a check.
The thing is, though, people got food, bro. People got flour. People got rice.
It's so funny. You know, this reminds me of a little bit. Because I used to work at Selfridges, diesel retail. And during, you remember like during the riots, there was that guy, that guy with the rice, that big bag of rice.
Amazing.
At the end of the day, like rice, you'd use it. Your family's going to use it.
Yeah, so man.
But yeah, actually, it was a close-up.
Yeah, but when I kind of got fired from Selfridges because I was tweeting. So I was getting in trouble on Twitter back them days, so 2011 days.
Yeah.
Because I was working in Selfridges and I said, like, I was joking, kind of not joking as well. And I was like, why doesn't anybody just rob Selfridges? I was like, why are we in ends when you could just go Selfridges? And then I said, and I was like, hint, Louis V's right at the exit. Bro, when I got pulled up,
oh, hey, bro,
they made me work 4 hours the next day. And I was like, oh, I just jolly myself, you know, the music's playing, I'm having a little dance on the shop floor. I tried to tap back in. They were like, no, come here. Well, the security stopped me and my card wasn't working. I went to the back, showed me my tweets. They were like, is this you? And it's like my photo, my name, Vujanic. I was like, yeah, man. And then I was like, nah, I was just bantering it. Like, I didn't mean it. Obviously, you kind of jokingly.
Yeah, of course.
It's comedy, so you kind of do mean it. There's a truth to it because you'd rather not your local areas are getting beaten up. But, you know,
do it to a man who they're going to be okay with it.
But obviously, like, since then, I have toned down a bit. But I feel you because you kind of, you don't want, you know, your local people to suffer. You don't want anyone to suffer, really.
Yeah, but the thing
really,
about it is that at the time, even with the Sainsbury's, as much as, you know, at the end, I knew that weren't for me, man. I ain't working Sainsbury's, you know what I mean? I just done it because I gave my mum, you know, I kind of cooled my mum down a bit. But the fact is, when I saw the amount of wastage, couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
It was very difficult to deal with because growing up ourselves, we just had the bare minimum of what we needed. You know what I mean? We just had the bare minimum. You know what I mean? Of course my mum got the flour and all that stuff. When you see stuff like that being wasted, I just thought, nah, man. And the way people treated like stuff that hardly anything wrong with it. You see how people throw food around at the back and all them things. Of course, there's times like, you know, with like biscuit and mini, I'll open a packet and just nyam one and just go about my business. And, you know what I mean? Just open a biscuit and just like eat the stuff. Wait, and just,
you were going for Sainsbury's, having biscuits, and then you'd,
you know what I mean? Just
and mini rolls.
Just eat, yeah, and mini rolls. Just mini rolls. Mini rolls is the ones where I just can't stop. Mini rolls are the ones that I can't, what's it called? I can't, what's it called with mini rolls? I can't stop with mini rolls. That's the one I'll probably eat for the rest of, even though whatever the fitness is, you know, they say, well, you can have one, it'd be is the Cadbury's mini rolls, but the strawberry jam one. One with strawberry jam and cream. Because I like doing it with my girls. Like now, what my girls like to see is how many I could put in my mouth at once. And gang, yeah, get it. You like that?
Yeah, I've had chocolate ones though, man.
But it is chocolate.
Oh, is it with chocolate on the outside?
It's chocolate on the outside. But
and it's got...
I'm going to watch Eddie and Ketia, man.
When?
Tonight, man.
You're going to Leeds tonight?
Yeah, man. I'm going to Leeds when I leave here.
To watch Eddie?
Yeah, man. I got to go and watch Eddie. Got to support him, man.
Eddie who?
Eddie Nketiah.
Nketiah is an Arsenal boy. He's gone along to Leeds United. Oh, that is incredible, bruv.
Like, Leeds are looking good as well. I really hope they get promoted.
You know something? I love Leeds.
And
The thing is, people don't realise. The thing with Leeds, and I keep telling people, when back in the day, they were horrible people to play in front of. The fans themselves were the ones, they just stopped that. Honestly, for me, like of course, Arsenal's my team. Love Leeds because they stopped it. The fans got up as an individual man and said, stop saying that. They used to be terrible. You listen to people, you speak to any of the black players that played through that time, especially like 80s, 85 and all them time when I used to play for Palace against Leeds and all them. Leeds were terrible. They fixed up their self.
Seriously?
They stopped it.
So do you reckon... So you're saying obviously racism was high.
Oh, absolutely! It was ridiculous
in Leeds, but then they stopped it themselves. The fans they said
stopped
no
it.
More.
Fans stopped it. You should look up Leeds and how they stopped it. They were unbelievable. The way they stopped it.
That's weird that you say, because it's funny that you say that, because it's so funny that you can talk about racism being an issue there and then without going into too much detail about certain things like the Pogba situation that sort of like crept up and kind of.
I mean, there was that. Obviously, I always felt. I mean, I grew up in like Northwest London. Sterling School was right next to me, and I always felt, me and Poet always felt Sterling was being negatively treated by the media.
Absolutely, yeah,
and it was clear. It was like clear as day.
I said that on Five Live. I said people went crazy. They go crazy.
It was insane. But it's just that it's nuanced, so you can't directly almost call it out because it's very like subtle little hints and jabs and what he's buying. It's clear. It's because of who he is and his profile.
But this is the problem that I have today, and I don't even know how to articulate it without sounding rude, but I don't want to be disrespectful, but it's like the Pogba situation's happened now, and it's like, well, we need to get rid of this, so let's just emphasize the fact that he's being racially abused for everyone to sort of calm it down. And it's like, I don't want racism to be a byproduct of a way of you getting out of a situation. Like, racism in football to me is a very serious thing. I remember taking a book, I used to do youth work for 10 years. I remember taking some boys down out of London and hearing, oh, you're the best colour team we've played. And I remember saying to the guy, what other packets of Crayola have you got? What other colours is there? Because we started laughing because we're like, what do you mean coloured team? Yeah. This is ridiculous. So when I see the Pogba situation manifest, I'm just sitting here thinking,
what's the best way to do it? I mean, because now it's obviously changed shape. It obviously still exists in society, but it's changed shape. It's almost like, how do you deal with it now when it's in that kind of way? Where you kind of, because you almost feel like, I see the Pogba thing and I'm like, well,
but
he's clearly a great player.
Yeah, but it's a pattern, Vooch. It's a pattern what's happening now. Okay. All of a sudden, because there's people who know that they can't be detected, this is why we've got to be calling out. Twitter got to do more. Twitter have got to do so much more to try and make it so as we can find out who has done that. They should be able to do that. You can't tell me they can't do that. We're talking about Cambridge Analytica, what the kind of things and data that them people are getting on people. You're going to tell me they've got 5,000 different kinds of data on each individual. 5,000! I didn't know I had 10. Right? So you're going to tell me that they can't pinpoint and find these people. I think that because at the moment, there's almost like a fad. Oh, a black guy plays badly. Let's abuse him online because they can't find him. Is it Chelsea fans? Like, is it Tammy Abraham?
That was horrible.
You know what I mean? So you've got Tammy. Then you've got Pogba and stuff like that. It's like there's people who know that you can't find them. They can't be detected. So they'll do it because they can continuously keep one step ahead.
Yeah,
Twitter not doing enough. They've got to do more.
Yeah, social media is a bit of a madness.
It is, man.
Been a bit crazy.
Social media is definitely something that
you've got to use it because it's a great platform. You know, they've got power to do it. They should do it. You know, they should do it, man. It's because it's all it does. It just makes people, and there's a young generation of people growing up seeing people like Pogba and Sterling and Tammy Abraham and that. They're getting that. It's like my girls are confused if anything like that. They don't even, people say they don't see colour. Of course you see colour because You're a different color to him, and he's different. There's color, but there's no. We're human race. Yeah. It's not color. It doesn't matter.
That's the only race that's involved.
That's the thing.
I was saying something to Vuj today, because it's funny that we're talking about Pogba, you know, the problems he has with football. And I was saying, I think people that watch football without being heavily invested in it to the degree that self, me, Vuj, and obviously someone like yourself is in, they look at football as Football Manager and FIFA. Mm. So if your stats are 87 shooting, every day, regardless if you had an argument with your missus, you had a problem outside of work.
You have so 87
you
shooting.
You have 87 shooting. So when you shoot, why is it not 87 shooting? And I find that concept so weird, because I'm trying to imagine being Paul Pogba, World Cup winner, one of the most talented players on the planet by a country fucking mile. Mm. His ability to control, his ability to orchestrate a game. From Juventus days, I was like, this boy is absolutely incredible. Surely, if you're going to work every day and you're getting tweets upon tweets cussing you, you're getting your crowd on you, you're getting Gary Neville on you, how are you able to do your job efficiently? How can you have 87 shooting?
But how mentally strong do you have to be in football as well?
Yeah, but the thing about it is, that's the thing. Because I remember even my time, because I was volatile. You know what I mean? I was on the edge most of the time. You know, certain people, they know. It's, you know, they know how I was. And, you know, I never went to the point where I was over the edge. You know what I mean? We saw with the Schmeichel. And
that
we saw,
was a match.
That took me over, of course, that took me over the edge. Team. Simply because, you know, the things happened and man should have apologised.
Can you just
before.
Give that some bit of context? Just because I mean, I'm a bit old. I'm really old. I remember that like it was yesterday. And I remember grabbing my mum. I remember me and my mum sitting down. It's like 1996. Arsenal versus Manchester United. 96-97 season, I think we lost 2-1. Goals from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, maybe Andy Cole and Dennis Bergkamp got it back to 2-1. So I remember that challenge. And I remember, and this is when I really hated the media. This is when I became very anti-media. Because the media created this agenda of
blood,
Ian Wright
every media.
Versus Schmeichel, and he's never scored against in an Arsenal top again. Yeah. And I was like, you're creating this scenario. And even from a younger age, my dad said to me straight away, they're creating a scenario that makes it harder for Ian Wright to do his job. Mm. Why?
And then what happens is that they want to keep you in that kind of, that bad guy, the bad guy. It was a tackle that shamed football.
I remember.
I saw a tackle on what Dean Saunders done on Paul Elliott was. He jumped on his knee.
But we're not going to talk about it.
And Cantona was bad.
You know what I mean?
Well.
You know, Cantona, man was, jumped in a crowd.
Yeah. But he's French.
Can we?
But he's French, you know.
You know what I mean? And this is why they look at black people and what black players have taken down the years. What do you think? That no black player ever wanted to do what Eric Cantona had done, but we've got a level of control, and what, because we had to. We can't. I don't know if a black player could kick a man
blood
in the crowd and still play football.
If Cantona was Balotelli,
it couldn't happen.
You know.
You know what I mean? I don't know any. You know, can you imagine how Cyril, God rest his soul, when he saw and a French player, Eric Cantona, kicks playing. Cyril must have been saying, you know, people like Cyril, Laurie Cunningham.
They could never have done
you
that.
You see what happened with people like Sully Montari? Man's reporting racism on the pitch. They sent him off to blood.
Like, what is.
They sent the fucking guy off.
So then, like, for example, without going into too much.
I'm saying. People don't business. They don't care enough.
But I'm saying with you, as much as it's mad, I remember I respected your whole approach to that game. Because my dad was sitting there and he was defending you, arguing with the commentators. Mm. They just couldn't hear him.
Yeah.
He was like, no, no. He said something to Ian. He goes, watch after the game, watch after the game. So I'm like, all right, dad, I'll watch. I remember the game finishes and you're still hysterical. And I think even that said, I like this guy. Something's happened and he doesn't care about 38,000 people watching. He doesn't care about Arsene Wenger on the sideline. Clearly doesn't care about Sir Alex and Ferguson, and everyone was scared of Fergie. I was like, I fucking love this man.
It's real, bro. At the end of the day,
and he's
real.
Not having it.
That's why even like sometimes I'm at the ground, and I don't think it's the best thing to say, but like I'm just like headbutt him.
<'Cause>,
look, I think that's my Balkan.
Yes, that's the Balkan.
The Balkan in me. No, but like in my head, I'm like, look, it's already 2-1. You're down. You've got 5 minutes. Just headbutt him.
No.
Just do it. And then you get that anger out, and you know what? Cool, a couple of media stories, and you're done. Fuck it.
You
carries
carry on
with
your life.
But that is maybe the more Balkan.
Yeah,
how's the bad with the Schmeichel thing, though? How bad was that Schmeichel thing? Just the scenario in terms of what you had to deal with afterwards? Because the papers, every single paper.
No, because they wanted to, because remember, so all of a sudden, they forget anything what has been said before, which is only the problem is, I just wanted people to apologise. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, it turned into the tackle that Shane Football.
And, I remember.
You know, I remember like the Daily Mail and that. They had pages from the back page, 5-6 pages in, doing that me on a couch and what's wrong with me mentally and all this sort of stuff.
Do you remember that? I remember that Ian Wright picture on a couch.
Honestly, on the couch, like I'm mad and stuff like
bro,
that.
Bro, it was on the top. The paper broke into two parts. So there was top part right here and it had Ian Wright on a couch. And I remember looking at it like what is going on? But then my dad said to me after that, they're going to have an agenda against Arsenal. And they did. I remember Patrick Vieira in 2000. Okay, he'd done some wrong things, but bro, literally every Arsenal player, Nicolas Anelka,
yeah, but the problem they had with me, I think as a black player at Arsenal and black player at that level of the game is the for want of a better word, is the streetness. It was the realness of the fact that I wasn't conforming.
No.
In respects of how I'm going to speak or how I'm going to try and
question about this.
I'm going to be okay. And that. Again, like I'd go in to see the FA and that. I said, "What am I even doing here?" I said, say to Mr. Fry, would always try to tell me to calm down. I said, "What am I even doing here?" And around the time, I said, "I'm here with a butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. Where are you from, Kent? Where are you from? This you're gonna try and say that what I've done there means that you can dish out this kind of punishment just like that, like you're the judge of the land. Do you know what I'm going through mentally on a daily basis?" But he's a top-level black player playing for Arsenal and what with things what's going on and you're just sitting there dishing out £17,000 fines just like this. I used to say that to them because when you're in there, the fact is they want you to come in there and they try and do this intimidating thing. There's three of them sitting there. You come on the seat that's fucking smaller than their seat. And then you've got Mr. Fry over there. You've got my David Davis over there and I'm sitting there. And then what I do is I sit forward on the seat. And so when they start talking, and then I just said, no, because it doesn't go like that. Man, they're not even expecting a man to talk back. So they start talking and they say, please, Mr. Wright, can you let us finish? I said, how can I let you finish? I shouldn't even be here. Straight, and then they talk. I said, okay, talk then. That's how I'm going, look, go on then, talk then. Then they talk and I said, right, you finished. Right, it's okay. How are you going to relate to what I'm going through on the football pitch? What level did you play at? They can't say anything. Mr. Fry had to take me out of the room and just say, Ian, you have to calm down and this and that. I said, what difference does it make? They're not going to take any notice of what I'm saying. It doesn't matter how... This is what I'm like in there.
Yeah.
And then what happens is my mouth gets frothier and frothier because I'm getting more and more angry and I probably start crying. That's how it used to happen. And he'd take me out and I said, this is fucking unjust, man. This is wrong. They're not even trying to find out why I'm going through this process, what's happening, so as they can try and deal.
Bro.
So they can deal with why. How many times did you see me having to go up to the FA?
Bro, all the time. There were always pictures of you walking out of the FA. You look fly, though.
Yeah, man, like, hey,
He was dripping.
No publicity is bad, bro, when you're going in, man. But when I go in there, man. It was fucking hard.
That must
hard.
Have been fucking hard, man.
It's hard because you know when you're going somewhere and you know you're not going to be...
It's a different world, isn't it?
You should have seen one time. I went in there when I got spat at Holden. And I was in there with Taylor. What's his name? Little PFA guy. Peter Taylor?
I don't know. Oh, I don't know.
So I had to go in with him. You could see me walk up. So I must have fouled Earl Barrett, right? So I fouled Earl Barrett. We're playing at Oldham. And so the last minute, Perry Groves crosses one. I head it in. 1-1. Yes, they're gutted. And you know what I mean? So we're walking up to go back to the dressing rooms. And you could see, because you could see it in slow motion, somebody got like that and spat at me. And I went, spat. And then the policeman grabbed me. So I had to go to the policeman grabbed me. Dave Seaman had to get the police. Dave Seaman grabbed the policeman and to get him off because the man grabbed me. Dave Seaman just grabbed him up, man, lifted him up, moved him, and said, "Don't touch him like that." So anyway, I had to go up in front of the FA for that. Gordon Taylor, who's in there with me, because remember it's a big thing about the spitting. Yeah. They're saying that I spat. You can see in the slow motion the guy spit. Gordon Taylor's in there saying to them, yeah, we can't condone a professional player spitting and this and that. That was me gone. I said, what are you doing in here? Who are you in here for? Said that to him. Who are you in here for? I said, what are you talking about? Can you not see the spit? He says, it can't. You shouldn't spit back. Why is he spitting at me?
Mad thing.
I said, if that guy spat on me on the street, his mouth would not work for a while. I'm telling you. It would not work because I would batter him or I'd try to. I said, how can you sit there and say that a professional player can't, professional person can't spit at someone, but someone can spit at me? What's going to happen to him?
But that's the human element.
It was ridiculous.
They don't, people, I guess they see you as a robot almost. You're some sort of, you're 87 shooting.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, you know, you say that, but the fact is that I couldn't comprehend that someone spat in my face and I can't do anything. And then I'm going to the FA and I get banned.
And it's your fault.
And do you know what's so upsetting as well? Like, this is why I think, I honestly think they should introduce counselling into football, you know, because it's like, you came in at 22. Yeah. So your whole level of thinking at a professional level, you're so far behind everybody else because they've been there since they were like 16, 17. Do you know what I mean?
So far behind.
And it's like, if you had additional counselling or help, which I feel like a lot of young players, especially from like different walks of life, they need it.
Yeah.
Especially foreign players when they come over and they don't know anything about England.
I had it right at the end. Okay, bro. Right at the end with the counselling because the anger was getting it was building up, and I think because you're coming to the end in respect of your career.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't want that to happen. I couldn't stop that. You know what I mean? When you know that you're gonna have to retire soon, you're coming. That's why some man drink and some man drug, some man gamble. I was fine, you know what I mean? In the end, you know, I saw somebody, you deal with it, but like every Saturday, 3 o'clock, whatever it is, right? What do you think? I don't want to play football. I want to play.
Come on.
You know what I mean? That never leaves you because the adrenaline you get of scoring a goal will never be able to be replicated with any other experience. Mm-hmm. Nothing gives you that back. Really? Nothing gives you that back. So you're chasing that. That's what you're chasing all the time.
And it's important to also hear these stories from people like yourself. You know, I feel like we're so quick to judge everyone, and especially on social media and it's the day and age we live in, that we're so quick to judge someone's mistakes, someone's errors, and go, he's all this, but they don't know the backstory. They don't know what someone's been through. Anything. We don't know, you know, when people are always getting at Balotelli or Ibrahimovic, or he's this, he's that. Or
it'd be great if they're able to sit down.
You know, if someone could sit down with these lads, I mean, they're welcome here, but do you know what I mean?
It's like, of course, welcome
to hear someone's backstory, I think you can empathize and go, this is a human.
Well, the thing is, you don't even want empathy. You don't want empathy. No. You just want them to understand that it's not like, I'm not crazy. I'm not just, but the environment in which I've grown up in and how I was brought up has made me what I am.
Yeah.
And I will react how I react because that's what it is. It's like people saying NWA, they shouldn't be writing about the things that they write about. They come out of their doorstep, they see police brutality.
It's the reality.
And what they're supposed to sing, what they're supposed to write about.
We love the police.
You know what I mean? Can't say we love the police.
So understanding, definitely.
Listen, man. Hold on, well,
thank you for joining
us. We have to do a part two. I didn't even give you a chance to talk, man.
I was just happy to listen.
Yeah,
we had questions and everything.
No,
but
man, it don't work like that. We can't put this one out, bro. You never had a chance.
No, we put this one out and we can say right now to everyone, there's going to be a part two.
Tell them there's going to be a part two, man, where we can hear what you lot can actually get to talk as well.
Either way, it was beautiful.
Trust me, man.
We'll do another one. But
let's take a picture, though.
Thank you for listening, watching.
Nice one, man.
Like, comment, subscribe. Have a nice.
Watch out for the voodoo, man. Anybody's badness, if you drive badness on me, something's going to happen to you.
Let me get that Ajax shirt up.